And with a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, it's Greg. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning to you. Beautiful morning. Temperatures are in the teens, and the winds have really been the big story the last few days, and very elevation dependent. Below about 10,000 feet, winds are generally light, less than 10 miles an hour with gusts in the teens. But once you get up above 10,000 feet, winds pick up, averaging in the teens with gusts in the 20s. And at 11,000 feet, they're quite strong, averaging in the 30s with gusts around 50 miles an hour. We've received no avalanche activity from the backcountry on Thursday, so that's certainly good news. And we've actually lowered the avalanche danger. It's been considerable for quite some time. We've lowered it to moderate. But a little bit of a caveat, we still do have that poor snowpack structure. That is, we have strong snow over weak snow. And although we haven't received any snow this past week, these winds that we've had the last few days, they have been creating some denser slabs of wind-blown snow on top of this weaker faceted snow. So it's been relatively quiet in the backcountry. There's been few avalanches. We're hearing less stories of collapsing and cracking. But that poor snowpack structure should really dominate your thinking. So you can find this poor snowpack structure on mid and upper elevation slopes facing west through north through southeast. And avalanches are becoming less common. But I wouldn't be surprised to hear about another human-triggered avalanche failing on this very persistent weak layer. Avalanches are still possible. So for today, we're going with moderate danger at all mid elevations. At all upper elevations. At mid elevations, moderate danger is west through north through east. All low elevations, as well as southerly aspects, southwest through south, have a low danger. We may get a trace of snow overnight, and a little bit later on, Sunday, you just heard a moment ago from the weather forecast, so maybe Sunday evening, but we're actually looking at perhaps a glimmer of hope by late this coming week that maybe we'll actually get into a long-term pattern with some more storms arising, but for the next week, it's not looking like much snow.
Okay, can't come soon enough. Thanks, Greg. Have a good weekend.
Sure can't. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Sarah Pierce and Jenny Dearson. We'll be talking about upcoming holiday weekend and the city's efforts to make things a little bit easier on transportation and parking. Summit County Health Department Deputy Director Phil Bondurant and the CEO of the Park City Chamber Bureau, Jennifer Wesselhoff, have details on the business testing program for COVID-19. And finally, Summit County Environmental Health Director Nathan Brooks with details on how to check for radon in your home as part of National Radon Month. Well, due to the Martin Luther King holiday, the Summit County COVID-19 vaccine clinic will be closed on Monday. The clinic will resume operation on Tuesday the 19th. COVID-19 vaccine appointments are currently booked out more than 2 weeks. Please do not drive to the clinic if you do not have an existing appointment to receive the vaccine. Links to scheduled appointments will go out the week of January 18th if you have already registered at summitcountyhealth.org/vaccine. The COVID-19 phone hotline will be open on Monday to answer your questions, 435-333-0050. While people looking to buy a bottle of wine or spirits in Old Town, Park City will have to make a drive rather than walking to the Sweet Alley Liquor Store. KPCW's Jessica Lowell has more on the location's temporary closure.
The Sweet Alley Liquor Store will be closed for at least a few weeks. This comes after staffing shortages in all state liquor stores. Tiffany Clayson is the new director of the Utah Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control. She says it's not only that stores are understaffed, but they also have to manage the challenges that come with a pandemic.
The DABC and our staffing have been impacted just like so many other industries and businesses, especially in the retail industry. When you have these exposures, you know, we want to make sure that we're keeping public safety first and foremost in all that we do.
The department has protocols in place for both direct and indirect COVID-19 exposures, which can shut stores down for a day to as long as a week. Indirect exposures mean that stores don't have to shut down. Instead, one or more employees can quarantine, creating a staffing shortage. Clayson says in some cases, they can transfer employees from other stores temporarily.
I know down in the valley, where we have sort of a larger volume of stores, there are instances where we're able to take management and kind of move them around to other stores, along with their part-time employees or other full-time employees at a location.
Not only do Park City liquor stores not have enough employees, those they do have are subject to quarantine. The assistant manager at the Sweet Alley liquor store says after losing a part-time and full-time employee, their location only has 3 staff members. Those 3 will transfer to other Park City locations. Clayson says this will help with customer service at the Kimball Junction and Snow Creek Drive stores.
And so what was important is that those 2 stores remain operational. They're larger. They have a really good selection. It's easier to social distance in those stores because they're larger. And so what we wanted to make sure that we did while we were having these staffing strains is be able to move the employees into places where we need to make sure we're continuing to have like a very robust operations so that they can have the best customer service experience possible.
Why is it so hard to staff state liquor stores? One possibility is the pay. Both part-time and full-time store clerks can make from around $10 to $14 per hour. Clayson says the DABC isn't the only state-run department that's struggling with compensation.
This is not a challenge that's unique to the DABC. It's not a challenge that's unique to state agencies. It's not even, unfortunately, a challenge that's unique to us, like in the broader picture of the economy here.
She hopes the department will be able to make salary adjustments, which she says could happen under Governor Spencer Cox's proposed budget. While the DABC has considered staffing agencies, Clayson says this isn't the best option.
When you have even part-time employees, but that are not temporary, they are able to provide the best service because they have greater ownership of the work that they're doing. They have maybe better training, better understanding product knowledge to be able to help customers.
The Sweet Alley liquor store will officially be closed Tuesday, January 19th. However, the last day it will be open is this Saturday due to the holiday on Monday. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
With snow in the forecast for the 3-day holiday weekend, Park City officials trying to avoid another day of gridlock. On the phone, who have details about the transportation, parking, and pedestrian plans being put into place for the MLK holiday weekend, as well as for the next several weeks, are Park City Deputy City Manager Sarah Pierce, along with Special Events Manager Jenny Dearson. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sarah, you're expecting heavy traffic from today now through February 21st. I mean, what's that based on, just looking at advance bookings?
Not actually. It's really based on our experience over the Christmas and New Year's holiday, where we saw a lot more drive traffic than we were expecting. If you look at lodging numbers, it doesn't translate. But because of that, we want to be prepared. We're in unknown territory, and so, you know, better to be prepared and scale back if we need to than to be caught off guard like we were over Christmas.
Yeah, but again, what could you have done during Christmas to have changed anything?
Well, it's a good question. Snow is always going to force people to slow down and, you know, cause accidents and things like that. But the systems that we're putting in place for the upcoming busy weekends are things like police officers at the Heber and Main intersection to help pedestrians cross the street safely and get cars through quicker. Trying to avoid people driving through the smaller neighborhoods with the narrow streets where they get stuck. Having the police out there to guide the traffic a bit more, working on those signals to flush traffic through. And just encouraging people to, you know, avoid the peak times if they can. If you need to go to the grocery store, you don't need to do it during a peak time if you can avoid it.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the city is adding police officers at key intersections. Of course, Park City is an idle-free community, but we see a lot of idling police vehicles, basically at those busy intersections, each vehicle idling for as much as 3 hours each. So, I mean, really, what difference are they making in traffic control? And does it warrant the difference they're making in the poor air quality?
Well, it's been proven that it does make a difference to have them there and to get people to pay attention to the lights and the moving traffic. And right now, we feel like that's the priority.
So you're asking people to plan ahead, and they can help reduce the traffic by taking free transit and carpooling, and as you mentioned, adjusting schedules when possible. I guess the concern is that we've got even few people carpooling and riding the bus due to COVID. So I guess is it going to make a difference? I mean, people, why would people get in a bus now?
Well, it's a good question. We do have significantly increased safety measures for the transit. Lots of measures in place, lots of cleaning. Masks are required. Everyone has to balance their risk, their own risk assessment. But it does help to have, you know, people riding transit if they feel safe doing that. And we've done everything we can to make it feel safe.
Yeah. So do you have any idea what the bus ridership numbers are at this point?
It's actually pretty good. We're down from last year, for sure, but we are seeing significant ridership, especially employees needing to get to work. And, we do have people that depend on that transit service, and we want to be there to provide it.
Yeah. At the same time, the city offered this year $30 monthly China Bridge parking passes for employees. It sounds like you've just invited more employees, though, to get into their cars instead of taking the bus.
Well, again, it's balance. This year is such a different year from any other year we've experienced, and we've got to provide all options for people.
Okay. And I guess finally, I mean, the city has, it can plan and message all it wants, but really the problem is, especially along 248 there, is we've got two lanes merging into one, both coming into town and leaving town. So wouldn't a big part of the problem be solved if we just put in two more lanes during that, that small block there between Bonanza and White Earp?
Yeah, we're looking at some bigger ideas with our transportation master plan, and all of those ideas are being, researched and analyzed, and working with UDOT, of course, because that's a UDOT road. And those are big ideas that we're hoping to implement in the coming years. But right now, we've got to look at what's in front of us.
Okay. And then, Jenny, talk about some of the other plans you have. You're hoping that will reduce the gridlock.
Well, Leslie, I think it's been really amazing to see over the past couple of years with events, the whole community has really come together during these peak times we've seen, and they have made changes in the way that they travel. So that is really the whole premise of this and purpose. All the teams here at the city put our heads together and said, well, let's dust off some of these tools we've been using and see how we can, make further changes. But at the same time, we're asking our community and visitors to think about those things, too. So we've really pushed a lot out this week about how people can do that specifically over the next month. Of course, there is the free transit system. I think one of the biggest things that you'll see coming up is pedestrian management, starting actually today. So again, Sarah mentioned the Heber and Main intersection, but we're going to also have some pedestrian management at the Park Avenue Hawk by the Fresh Market. What happens is when people cross and they're not in a crosswalk, number one, it's hard for motorists to see them, and that's dangerous. So we want pedestrians who are walking and taking that initiative to use crosswalks as much as possible. The other thing that happens is when you cut right in front of a car, of course, the motorist has to stop, and that continues to back up traffic. So we are looking at how to help manage pedestrians a little bit better and also make it safer, and so you'll see that at several key intersections. I think most people know we've also rolled out the DLS zones this past November, and those have been going well. In addition to that, we have several 15-minute curbside spots. So if you just want to run in and pick up, something from a merchant or pick up dinner or lunch or something like that, there's five of those 15-minute spots around town to make it convenient. But again, in that case, we're asking the motorist to pull all the way to the curb and not block the traffic behind everybody. Because again, that's one of the causes of the traffic backup that we're seeing. And then I think the other really important thing is we have a great text alert if you want to know if the resort parking is full, if you want to know about transit to take, or, you know, winter weather approaching. We ask that you sign up for our text alert, and everyone can do that by just texting RIDE ON, it's one word, to 888-777. And we just are reminding folks that that's a great tool so that they can plan ahead and really think about, you know, how they can carpool or help reduce trips. And again, I really appreciate the community for all that they've done and really thinking ahead and planning how they're going to get around.
Yeah, so with school out at both Treasure Mountain and Park City High School, at least through January 25th, will those parking lots be available?
The resorts have agreements with those parking lots, and so depending on how they fill their lots, they will push to those locations, again, based on how capacity is in their lots.
Yeah, that's
usually... And then run additional transit.
Yeah, I mean, that's usually just on the weekends, but given that there is no school, at least, you know, like I say, during the week until the 25th, I'm just wondering if that's going to be available or not. You don't know.
I'm sure that they have coordinated that with the school, and we can follow up on that specifically. But that's the great thing, again, about those text alerts when we hear from the resorts where they want to push, whether it's the Canyons or Ecker Hill or another location. If you're signed up for those, you know where that is happening.
All right. And again, people, to get those, they just text the word RIDE ON, all one word, to 888-777.
You got it.
Okay. Anything else, ladies, you want to mention?
I did have one thing, Leslie. Mm-hmm. We have this great app through the transit service that you can check for how busy the buses are and how crowded your specific bus is. If you go to parkcity.org and click on the bus icon on the homepage, it'll take you to the transit department section. And if you click on health and safety, there's instructions on how to download the MyStop app and how to check for crowded buses. So that's one way to really help with this, you know, balance of COVID concerns and also, you know, wanting to get cars off the road.
Okay. Sarah Pierce, Jenny Dearson, hey, thanks. Hope it works.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
Park City's newly tapped planning director, Gretchen Milliken, and her personal connections to the Kimball Arts Center have raised questions about transparency at City Hall. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more.
Gretchen Milliken was announced as Park City's new planning director on January 5th. In the press release announcing her hire, the city did not mention that Milliken is married to Aldi Milliken, the executive director of the Kimball Arts Center. Connections like this are not necessarily uncommon in small communities, but given the Kimball Arts Center is a major player in Park City's proposed Arts and Culture District, a project that heavily involves the city's planning department, the Milliken connection raised eyebrows. Park City Mayor Andy Bierman says not disclosing the connection was an unfortunate mistake.
It's probably an oversight. I don't think there was any, you know, something that obvious and something we were trying to hide or marginalize. And so perhaps it was an oversight that we should have put into the initial press release.
Bierman says Milliken will not play a part in any of the financial aspects of the Arts and Culture District or be involved in the land purchase negotiations between the city and its partners, the Kimball Arts Center and the Sundance Institute. He says the conflict was addressed during the hiring process.
We're a small town, so we deal with conflicts all the time, conflicts between elected officials or staff and ex-work relationships or having spouses or partners or relatives that are involved in nonprofits or businesses we deal with. And it's something we thoroughly vetted in the interview process. It's something we discussed how to address in advance. And Gretchen was very clear on what she might need to recuse herself on. So we thought it was a very manageable conflict and not unusual. So we were a little surprised when it got so much attention.
Bierman pointed to conflicts that were dealt with by the city in the past, like retiring planning director Bruce Erickson's connections to local ski resorts, or that he was a member of the Park City Planning Commission when his late wife, Candy, was also a city council member. Bierman also noted that the Arts and Culture District is only one project of several that involve Milliken's department. In addition to the district, the massive base development projects at Park City Mountain Resort and Deer Valley will be a huge part of her job going forward. Park City Deputy City Manager David Everett says five or six other candidates were seriously considered for the job. He says Milliken's previous experience as a planner in Louisville, Kentucky, dealing with sustainability, housing, and transportation issues, and to a lesser extent her relocation to Park City, made her stand out.
The fact that she was already a Park City area resident was noted, but that really wasn't a determining factor. What was the determining factor was, you know, our experience and skill set, and that she was really head and shoulders above other candidates we had in the pool at the time.
Milliken is set to take over as planning director on February 1st. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
Well, on Monday, January 4th, Summit County, Park City, the Park City Chamber Bureau, and the People's Health Clinic opened up its free rapid COVID-19 testing program. It's available to all businesses in Summit County and their employees. On the phone with details, I have Summit County Deputy Health Department Director Phil Bondurant, along with the CEO of the Park City Chamber Bureau, Jennifer Wesselhoff. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Phil, let's start with you and just have you tell us when and where is this testing taking place?
Yeah, so the testing is taking place 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. But we have a process set up where, because of the way the governor's guidelines have been laid out, there are some qualifying factors that need to be addressed first. So what we're asking individuals to do is contact our hotline, which that number is 435-333-1546. And when they call that, they speak to one of our community health workers who runs them through the questionnaire to make sure that they qualify for the test and then sets them up for a test at some point between Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. So we're running it 5 days a week, making sure we get people in and out. But there is a few questions that we have to make sure that are answered prior to them showing up to the site for testing.
So what are those questions?
Well, as if you recall in the governor's order, back towards the end of 2020, he modified the quarantine period for individuals and is calling it a modified quarantine period. And this is the prior governor, Governor Herbert, saying that if you have been exposed at work and you are asymptomatic and it has been 7 days since that exposure, you can receive a test. And if the rapid test is negative, you can return to work. Why we have people call ahead of time is so that if for some reason there's things that are different with the situation, because as we can imagine, every situation is different. We want to make sure we get people in at that 7 day mark, we get them an appointment, and we don't overwhelm the staff at People's Health Clinic with individuals just showing up for a test without that appointment, so that we can keep it controlled and make sure that everybody has access to this program.
So this is really only for people who have been diagnosed for COVID and want to be able to return to work early?
Well, no, it's actually for people that are asymptomatic and they're not unsure if they have COVID, but they were exposed at work. And under the quarantine guidelines, an exposure can result in a 10 to 14 day quarantine, depending on the situation. The goal of this program was to allow people at that 7 day mark to receive a test and get back to work, hopefully 3 to 7 days earlier. And prior, it was difficult for individuals to find access to a test or to pay for that test. And we wanted to make it as easy as possible for these members of our community, our service industry, anybody that lives or works in Summit County, to get back to work sooner, safer, and keep things going.
Yeah. So in terms of, being exposed at work, what does that look like? You're the person that sits next to you being diagnosed, or somebody just in the office that you may not have had a lot of contact with?
Yeah, and that's a great question, and it's one that we hear quite often at the community health workers when they call, they field that question. But typically what happens is an individual in a workplace or a work setting tests positive for COVID-19. As part of the contact tracing, individuals are identified to have been in close contact. Now, that can change based on the situation in the workplace. Obviously, it's going to be different on a construction site outdoors versus an office setting where people may share space and cubicles. So that's one of the reasons that the community health workers and the case investigators and contact tracers need names of contacts, so that we can work through, identify who's exposed, and then help them get back to work after that 7 day period using this program.
Yeah, and what's interesting though is that even people who have had the virus are still able to carry the virus and spread the virus?
Yeah, there's some indications that the shedding occurs well after symptoms have resolved themselves or people are feeling well or even after the 14-day period. And so if there's one thing we've learned from COVID, it's that it's unpredictable and there's still a lot to be learned about it. And so that's one of the reasons that the isolation, the quarantine, those things, as difficult as they are important until the vaccine rollout has reached greater capacity and we're farther into the general population.
All right. So how long does it take to get an appointment?
Well, right now, we are seeing about an average of 25 a day, and we are booked up through the rest of this week and already starting to book appointments into next week. That being said, you can call into the hotline, speak with a community health worker, and they can get you lined out with an appointment to come in. And to this point, even though the demand is growing for the program, we have not turned anyone away from being able to receive a test.
Yeah, and I was going to say, some of them, I mean, by the time they were to maybe get an appointment, they'd be able to come back to work anyway without a test, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's obviously a concern, which is why we encourage people to call in as soon as they've been exposed, set those dates. Obviously, if you find out on a Monday that you were exposed by a coworker, the following Monday you could test. You want to call in that Monday and set up an appointment for the following Monday so that you were on that queue at 8 o'clock a.m. and maybe you return to work that day with a negative test.
All right. How soon do people get their results?
They're immediate. These are the 15-minute rapid antigen tests. So the ladies at People's Health Clinic that are doing the test for us are kind enough to run the test using the equipment that we have and then provide a slip at the end with the results that can be used to take back to work if they are negative, or it provides instructions if there's a positive test on what the next steps are.
Yeah. So how accurate are the results? I mean, we've heard there's like a 30% false negative on these rapid testing.
Yeah, and there's, you know, as you can imagine, there's a variety of tests that have come out on the market with a number of companies trying to do their part to help curb the pandemic, but we're using the Veritor tests, which actually have a higher rate of accuracy in asymptomatic individuals, upwards of 84% accurate if the test is given at the 7-day mark. And that's one of the reasons that we've gone with this test. There was after some of the reports came out about other tests having a larger gap in accuracy, there was a big push to move to the BD Veritor test, which is what we're using to increase that accuracy.
All right. So, Jennifer, what's the chamber's role in all of this?
Well, Leslie, thanks for having me. The county contacted us with this idea of partnering to help businesses get open faster. And originally, their idea was to coordinate with the chamber. Would the chamber be interested in providing a space and providing funding for medical professionals to provide the tests, to execute the tests? So I'm thinking, oh goodness. Well, first of all, why wouldn't you partner with the hospital on something like this? And I asked the deputy county manager about that. And she's like, well, frankly, the hospitals are already really busy. So the more that we could divert folks from the hospital for these rapid tests, the better it would be for the hospital and healthcare professionals. So I'm thinking to myself, how do we figure out a way to do this? The county had the tests. They just didn't necessarily have the location and or the medical professionals to be able to provide the tests. So I called Beth at the People's Health Clinic and bounced this idea off her, and it was an enthusiastic yes. She would provide the location. We would provide the funding for the medical professionals. We contacted the city. The city said, heck yes, we want to participate too. So the city and the chamber are providing funding to cover the cost of the medical professionals and the reporting that goes along with that, which is an important part of it. And then also then the county is providing all of the tests. So it really is a perfect example of a public-private partnership working for the betterment of the entire community.
So how much do we have budgeted for the program between you and Park City?
Right now, we didn't know exactly how many tests we would need. So right now, we have $10,000 invested in the program. But I'm certain if the People's Health Clinic needs more, we'll find a way to make that work because the program's working. Last week, we had 88 employees that got tested. 12 of them tested positive. 72 of them were able to return to work more quickly, either 3 to 7 days earlier than they would have. So when you start to think about how those wages and how that money starts to circulate through the economy, it really does become a huge positive economic impact for our community, our employees, and our businesses.
Yeah. So the program, do you expect it then to last through the winter? Or, I mean, if the money runs out before then, it'll continue to go? You'll just figure something else out?
Yeah, I think part of it is making sure that we have the funds to cover it, which I don't think will be a problem, and also making sure that the county has the available tests, which I understand with the new round of federal relief funding, more testing came through to the county. So, you know, we're going to work really hard to make sure the program's available as long as the community needs it, because it's important.
How many businesses are we talking about that are eligible for this?
It's meant for small businesses. So it's meant for businesses that have 50 employees or less. From my understanding, the county is working directly with the larger businesses to manage rapid testing or testing programs with those larger businesses directly, going on site to those businesses if that's necessary. So any business in Summit County is eligible, and that's the important part of the program. Just because the chamber is sponsoring it doesn't mean that it's open only to chamber members. You know, our businesses need our help right now, and we're going to help them, whether they're a chamber member or not.
Okay. All right, Phil, again, if people are interested in getting that, the hotline number once again is what?
435-333-1544. And the information is also available at summitcountyhealth.org.
Okay. Anything else we need to mention, guys?
No, thank you. Stay safe out there. Keep your distance, wear your masks, and wash your hands. We're almost to the end of this.
Okay. Phil Bondurant, Jennifer Wesselhoff, thanks so much for your time. Well, the Corona Kindness Facebook page is asking for donations of books, puzzles, toys, and blocks for families with disabled or developmentally delayed children ages birth to 3 years old. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has details on how you can help support these Wasatch-backed families.
Summit County Health Department's early intervention speech-language pathologist Lori Hansen says they serve about 75 families in their homes using a medical model that provides early interventions in physical, occupational, speech, and nursing therapies.
We need books and toys, blocks, puzzles that are appropriate for birth to three. A lot of our families don't have the means to purchase these items, so we end up leaving items with them. And we get these items from donations. We also work with the Christian Center to get donations from them.
Summit County Early Intervention Director Jackie Swan says the pandemic has been uniquely difficult for families with medically fragile children. She says parents are trying to juggle working from home or being out of work while managing children with special needs.
During COVID, our families with children with disabilities have had a much harder time being able to go into the community to access toys, and it's been very difficult for them to take care of their children.
Families are extremely grateful for the donations, as Swan explains.
I just delivered, actually, right before this, I just delivered a slide to a family with a little kid with seizure disorder, and the mom just sent me a clip of a video of the kid climbing up it for the first time, and she was almost in tears. So, I mean, I think there's so many things that you can do just to be helpful, right? And we're doing everything we can to try to impact these families.
They're looking for simple wooden puzzles, books, and blocks of all shapes and sizes, which will be distributed quickly to families in Summit and Wasatch counties. Items should be clean and safe and in working order. There is a front porch drop-off in the Ranch Place neighborhood. Message the administrator on the Corona Kindness Park City Facebook page for details. A drop-off bin is located inside the Summit County Health Department's front door, and they'll even come to pick up donations from your front porch. Call Lori Henson to schedule a pickup at 435-400-0460. Links to the Corona Kindness Facebook page and the Summit County Early Intervention website can be found on kpcw.org. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Well, radon gas, the leading cause of lung cancer, and January is always Radon Action Month. On the phone with details about radon and how you can protect yourself is Summit County Environmental Health Director Nathan Brooks. Good morning, Nathan.
Hi, Leslie. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. So this is the time of year that the states encourage their residents to test for radon gas. I mean, just a little background, what is radon and what is it that we're testing for?
Certainly. Radon gas is a cancer-causing radioactive gas. It's actually the second leading cause of lung cancer, right behind smoking. And it's estimated, you know, each year that 20,000 people lose their lives to radon gas. So it's a pretty big deal, and it's really big right now because this is the time of year when we don't ever open our windows. We're keeping the cold out, so our houses are on lockdown, and it creates an environment that the gas cannot escape naturally out of the breakdown that's happening beneath our foundations and our floors. So in our basements, it's extremely susceptible because the naturally occurring uranium is breaking down, goes into our homes through cracks and crevices, and we wouldn't know it. It's you can't smell it, taste it, see it. The only way you can detect it is by testing.
I read that 1 in 3 homes in the state of Utah has elevated levels of radon. How elevated does it have to be before you need to do something about it?
The average home in Utah has about a 5.3 picocuries per liter, and the EPA action level is 4.0. So in the state, and this is obviously this is an average, but across the state, it is a little more elevated than what the EPA deems as being safe. So yes, it's more common, you know, especially in a mining community in Colville, Park City areas. It could be elevated, and it could be your house is higher than your neighbors right next to you. So that's why it's important we test.
Yeah. And they say testing should be done every year. Why is that? I mean, because the Earth's constantly moving?
The Earth is constantly moving. The change and breakdown with that uranium that's occurring from the rock, the water, everything tends to change, you know, varies on the environment and the what's happening underneath our homes. So that's why we encourage, you know, especially because we spend the most time, even this year, more than any other year, 2020 and this year, at our homes working. So a lot of us are, you know, working at home.
Yeah. And then, of course, we saw an earthquake last spring as well. So that's going to maybe make a difference as well.
I would think so, yeah, certainly. Yeah. Anything like that environmentally that changes, and it could even change not even what's occurring with the soils, but your house may have settled differently and it may have had, you know, different cracks and joints have expanded, different things like that. So the supply of that radon is coming in and it's lessening the amount of fresh air.
Yeah. So how does somebody get a testing kit and tell us how easy is it to do the test?
The test is super easy. It's really improved over the years. It's a simple charcoal test. You can pick up one of the test kits for $10 at the Summit County Health Department, or you can visit our website at summitcountyhealth.org and check out the details there. We do ask, because it's still COVID policy, that you call ahead, and the number to call to make an arrangement to pick up that test kit is 435-333-1500. And we can get you set up with the test kit. It's simple. You open the test kit at home, usually in your basement, let it sit for about 3 days. You package it up and send it in, and they will send you the results.
Okay. And where, if you don't have a basement, where would you put it?
If you just want to place it in your home where it's not going to be disturbed, that mm-hmm. that would work just fine as well.
Okay. And if a test should come back higher than what is recommended, then what do you do?
The first thing would be not to panic. Like I said, it's common in Utah that it could be elevated beyond that EPA threshold. We do have a lot of very certified and technical people that can figure these out. They come in, they would bore a hole into the foundation and the floor, and they simply get underneath the concrete slab, and they put in a suction pump exhaust system, which pumps the gas up and out and above the roof of the home. So it basically bypasses the home. And this works well because it reduces if there's asthma triggers, air particles, VOCs, or mold. It's going to suck all of that out and put it up in, you know, out of the home. So it's away from everyone.
Yeah. So is it always fixable then?
Most times, yeah, they can develop a solution, and they're really good at what they do, and their certifications and education is the biggest thing. If you don't know what's out there within your home environment, then you're probably never going to know what level you're at.
Okay. The Summit County Board of Health in the past has paid to have all of the county's schools tested. Are we continuing to do that?
Yes. We obviously, with last year with the COVID-19, it took a little bit on the backside of this, but 2019 we did work pretty extensively to get that done. I think we made it mostly through all the public and private. Our focus now is working more towards daycares, preschools, and child care facilities to ensure that those are done. So that's our hope this year.
Okay. Again, each kit, $10. People can go to summitcountyhealth.org or call ahead 435-333-1500. And what, just say I'm going to come by and they'll tell you a time to do that, to pick one up?
Correct. Yeah, you can arrange a time and you can pick that up. It should be pretty easy. Our front desk staff is ready and willing to help you. So.
All right, Nathan, anything else people should know?
Nope. Like we said, the biggest thing is this is Radon Awareness Month because this is when we seal up our homes. So this is a great time to do it next month and into March. So don't forget to come over and pick up a test kit.
All right. Hey, Nathan Brooks, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Nathan Brooks is Summit County Environmental Health Director. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, Summit County Council member Melina Stevens is in an unusual position. She voted on the Dakota Pacific proposal at Kimball Junction last fall as a member of the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. Now, as a newly installed county council member, she'll vote as part of a final decision on the proposal. KPCW's Rick Bruff reports that Stevens and other council members are taking under advisement the comments they heard at Wednesday's public hearing.
Stevens told KPCW that the people she heard this week and their concerns were similar to what she heard last summer in public hearings, but some new information did come out of the meeting. Stevens said she'd like to get additional public outreach on the project. She said that all along, the affordable housing in the proposal has been important to her.
And I stated this on Planning Commission as well. I think it's critical that we have affordable housing and different housing types. And so the rental component and ensuring that we have additional rentals to me is very intriguing because that is a product type that we don't have a lot of within the basin or just the Park City area in general. So many of those have been taken up by nightly rentals that were long-term leases previously. And so having something that is and stays rental, I think would also be a community benefit because if those people had to stay there as primary residents, I think that could really improve some of our ability to house workers at all levels.
One question out of the public hearing was if Dakota will truly be creating a community for families.
Because if it's going to just be a loud, busy area that's really not creating a sense of place and a sense of community, that's not having community benefits broadly as well as for those that are living within the neighborhood, then it's not likely to be something that we need to have within this community. I think that right now we do have people on both sides of the fence as far as this is concerned, those that believe it would have community benefits, those that believe it would not. I think that we have some ways to go. And
Dakota's application would amend the original approval given to the Boyer Tit Park in 2008. However, Councilmember Roger Armstrong suggested opening up the development agreement. Stevens said that could be helpful.
I heard from other members of the council that that would be something they would find interesting, that we need to make sure that the development agreement itself is consistent, and so we don't have any holes that allow for unintended consequences. I think we want to be as intentional as possible. I know initially there was a lot of intention behind the Tech Park agreement, and I think if there is to be a change to the agreement, that we need to be just as intentional now with what we are trying to accomplish and what this community is envisioning.
On a related topic, the council got a presentation from UDOT on that Kimball Junction area plan and saw four alternatives for changes or upgrades to the area along Interstate 80. We asked Stevens if any of the revisions interested her.
There was a couple of alternatives that made some improvements to the intersections at Ute Boulevard and Olympic Parkway. And I found those very intriguing because those are some choke points right now that we have that are not working effectively currently. So I would like to see an option that either incorporates some changes to those intersections or changes those intersections so that we can have an easier flow of traffic in and out of 224, not just kind of the freeway on and off ramps.
Summit County Council Member Melina Stevens. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Well, last July, Oakley City implemented a development moratorium in order to update their land management code. The 6 months for the development freeze will be up next week, and the results will then be unveiled for citizens. Utah law allows temporary zoning moratoriums for up to 6 months. Oakley's halt on all subdivision applications and building permit approvals went into effect July 23rd. Oakley City Planner Stephanie Wollstonehulme said that the city thought it was time to review and update their general plan and land use code. She said the city's planning commission met twice a month on the revisions.
So just taking in everything that we want to do related to land use management and development, and making sure that it's written how we envision for our city, but also that it's compliant with state code.
She also talked about some of the changes in the code.
The new code will be a lot more specific as far as development standards and how we plan on allowing subdivisions to come into Oakley City and the requirements for those, as well as the different permitting processes for different things in the different zones.
She said the code revision will be released by the end of next week or the week after that, and she added that a public hearing is set for February 17th.
So depending on public input from that meeting, there will either be little and the public will love it, hopefully, and we will be able to just make little tweaks and send it on to City Council. If there is some great public input that requires some changes in it, then we'll make those changes, and then it will go before Planning Commission for a second public hearing.
That's Oakley planner Stephanie Wollstonehulme. A revision to their general plan has already had a public hearing and will be adopted with the new land use code.